Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Please consider donating or purchasing a transcript by going to our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. You'll help support other documentaries and podcasts such as this. The year 1837 was one of the most turbulent periods in all of Mormon history. It was the year the Kirtland Bank collapsed. Many, including apostles, lost faith in Joseph Smith and his ability to lead. Why did Joseph decide that Kirtland needed a bank? What were the economic reasons behind this? Historian and author Dr. Mark Staker talks about this in his book about the Kirtland period. We'll talk to him about the events that led up to the Kirtland banking crisis.
The Kirtland Temple was expensive. They did everything they could to build this fabulous structure that was well beyond their means, but a lot of people donated to it. They had contributions continuing to come in. Even non-members donated to it because they wanted to contribute to this.
Oh, wow, and I didn't know that non-members contributed.
So they had, by the time they finished the temple, it was already halfway paid for. Now, getting exact figures, because we don't have the ledgers, and exactly how much came in, how much went out, we can only approximate based on things that were said or written down at the time or some later reminiscences. But it looks like they were in very good position. They may have owed $20,000 or less on this structure. But they were interested in paying it off. They wanted to get the debt out. More interested in building Kirtland as a community. They wanted people to come in, and while they're paying it off, they're going to continue to expand the community. They have a lot of property that they are then turning around to sell to people, dividing it up into smaller segments and selling it. And property all over the region is just going through this phenomenal boom growth. An economic boom in terms of prices are skyrocketing. People are buying a lot and then selling it for twice the price a few weeks later, and then that person a month or two later is selling it again for twice the price, and the land's just going up quite a bit. There's a lot of speculation throughout the country at this time, and everybody is excited about this great economic boom. They could have easily paid off the temple if they had, just waited for a while. And they may have actually been able to, to pay it off almost immediately if they had just drawn on resources. But they're looking to grow the community. And so it's not just a temple debt that they're trying to address as much as it is that they want to expand the community. They want to get in on all this growth that's happening all over the country, and everybody's getting excited. They travel to Salem, Massachusetts, where they go to look for some treasure that's supposedly buried in the basement of a home there, and it turns out that it's really bad information that they have, and that there's not really treasure buried in this basement, by a ship's captain or somebody that had gone and left it behind. And but while they're going out there, they go through New York and they visit Wall Street. They see these trains. They see all this industry going on. And they, Oliver Cowdery's writing back these letters and suggesting that banking is something of interest. And exactly how that congeals in their minds, what it is that they plan on doing, why, what is it that they see that leads them to this decision. They come back with the idea that they need to have a bank in Kirtland, and they need to be able to print their own money and to do their own things, and it will foster this growth. They're getting some revelation along the way, but exactly what they're being told in this revelation, we don't know, other than that if they do what the Lord tells them, that everything will be fine. And Joseph Smith shares that with people. Wilford Woodruff writes that down in his journal, that is, as long as they do what the Lord tells them to do, that they'll be fine. which suggests that if they don't, then there could be problems. I'm not sure they really considered the other side of the coin and how important it is that they're obedient to the revelations that they're receiving. But very early on, they're already receiving some money from people that's going to go into the bank, and they're already writing out some IOUs that aren't on printed banknotes, but that are kind of making, you know, promising things as they're trying to do this, the finances for all this property, with the understanding that they're going to have this bank institution. They, Oliver Cowdery gets the printing plates so that they can print banknotes, and they begin doing that. And Orson Hyde is assigned to go and get the bank charter from the state, because the state has to issue that charter. So he'll go to the state legislature that'll do that. Orson Hyde seems to drag his feet on this whole thing. Why? I don't know. Does he think that it's going to be so easy he doesn't need to lay the groundwork? Or does he think it's so hard that it's an impossibility and it's not really even worth his effort? And but initially they don't get that bank charter. And their representatives, their elected representatives, are anti-Mormons, and they are both connected with the Bank of Geauga, which is the largest bank right there in the area. So naturally they're not going to want to create a competitor to them, and this would be their competition. And so that would hurt themselves financially. And what politician ever votes on something that's going to hurt him financially? A few. I'm sure there are some out there, but a few. So they go through somebody else, and it takes some time, you know, to get this other person to take their proposal through and work to get a bank charter.
Let me ask you a question there. So why do you think the competition makes a lot of sense, but why were they anti-Mormon in the first place?
Well, those questions are always really difficult to answer for any of us. There are clear economic factors at play. You know, they've been hurt financially, and so it can be economic interests, and I tend to kind of look at those as being motivators. I suspect that there are other things involved as well, but I can't tell you.
Because I know it seems like Joseph Smith was really, that was his big thing, oh, they're anti-Mormons. So I was just wondering, you know, was it like Dr. Hurlburt, where his sister joined and he got mad, or, you know, whatever?
Well, yeah, they tended to look at things, you know, as being anti-Mormon or pro-Mormon, and then you could kind of break those down as into, you know, motivating factors. I tend to look at the economic factors, which are relevant in this case, that there were economic competitions that motivated these individuals, so that they had competing in financial interests.
Okay.
I'm sure other things probably played a role as well, but one of their close associates, Grandison Newell, he was kind of let out in all of this opposition to the bank. He was on the board of directors of the Geauga Bank with them, but he also had business interests in Kirtland that may have been influenced by them and the Latter-day Saints in various ways. Anyway, while this charter issue is trying to work its way through the legislature, they're already going forward because they have money, they're interested, they've printed it, they're pushing their institution forward. There are lots of institutions all over northeastern Ohio doing exactly the same thing. They aren't unique, and they're not even unusual. It's very typical. What they're doing is just as common as can be. Every community is doing exactly the same thing because they're all trying to get in on this. There are on some of these early banknotes, for one day they stamp anti-banking company. Is there some concern that maybe they won't get the charter? But I think it's more that they're trying, until the charter comes, they're trying to make sure that they follow the law. I don't think that there was ever really much of an interest in calling this the anti-banking company. That's often picked up by historians later on and made, you know, as a big deal. But at the time, they don't. I find no historical references to it as the anti-banking company, other than these banknotes. It's the Kirtland Safety Society, or the Kirtland Bank, but the Kirtland Safety Society is what they're calling the organization, and it's using similar language. There are other safety societies out there, and what it suggests is it's more kind of a working man's bank. It's more a populist kind of an organization, and so that suggests that that's their intention, is for this to be a working man's organization.
So let's talk about that word, anti-bank. In the Book of Mormon, we talk about the anti-Nephi Lehis, and in today's language, we would think they're against banks, they're against Nephi and Lehi. But that's not really what the term meant back then. What did the term anti mean back then?
Well, in the context of the Book of Mormon, anti-Nephi Lehis, you know, it could be kind of a quasi bank. So it's kind of a bank that's not quite really a bank. It's not opposed to banks as much as it's kind of a bank that's not yet a chartered institution. And so did they mean that in this? I don't know. I don't know what they did. They leave absolutely no historical record as to why that's attached to those banks.
So is that what we would say? It's a quasi-bank? If Joseph Smith were starting this today, he'd call it a quasi-bank maybe?
Yeah, or a credit union. maybe they would have called it the Kirtland Credit Union as a way of kind of getting around that, because it's in some ways, yeah, it performed as a bank but was not a bank, and so that might have been their intention with that. They had banking elements. They had a board of directors. Most banks had like three or four individuals that were board of their board of directors. The Kirtland Safety Society had seven who were kind of the chairs of the board of directors, but then there were 20, 30 people or more that were actually on the board of directors. This was a massive board. It was going back again to that working man's kind of organization. It wasn't a communal economic effort in that everybody in the town, at least on the director's level, everybody was part of the directors, but all of the leaders, there were men, there were women, there were members, there were non-members that were on this board of directors. It was a large community effort to participate in this Kirtland Bank. And then they turn around and sell stock into the bank. Most banks in the area, well, most in the whole country, banks are selling stock at like $100 a share, which, you know, that's a year's salary for anybody. And you can imagine if you're selling stock in your enterprise at $30,000 a share, $40,000 a share today, that you're not going to get very many investors and that they're going to be very wealthy people. Well, what the Kirtland Safety Society does is they're selling stock at very small amounts, and you can pay 12.5 cents and buy initial payment on a share of stock. And so people are, for $25, which is, you know, a month's salary there, you can invest comfortably into this organization. And there were lots of people, even poor people. Nathan Staker, one of my ancestors, he's poor. He's a former Methodist class leader. That he's getting help, financial help, from his brother-in-law because he can't even support his family, but he buys a share of stock, you know. And so I see this as a different model than what's going on in Missouri, where people are all consecrating all their property and getting back a portion. This is a different way of getting at that communal organization and building that city of Enoch by allowing everybody to become part of this financial institution that will then help earn money for everybody and help everybody to kind of lift everybody up together, but also allow everybody to borrow money to build homes and to buy property. And so this is a way of building up the whole community as a whole, allowing everybody to benefit and be part of it. And that's how the Kirtland Safety Society starts out.
I hope you enjoyed part one of our discussion about the Kirtland banking scandal. We'll continue to talk about this in part two, and Dr. Mark Staker will talk about whether Joseph Smith really was to blame or if there were other factors involved in the collapse of the Kirtland Bank.
There's Grandison Newell. He wants to put the bank out of commission, and so he goes up and buys up all of the banknotes he can buy. And he comes in and he asks for specie, which is the hard currency, gold and silver coins rather than the paper notes. And the bank has to trade for those. And so all of its currency, all of its specie that's in the coffers of the bank, it's in its vault, they're trading out to Grandison Newell, and he's trying to create a run on the bank.
We hope you'll come back and listen to part two. Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.